my first World Cup, and I was the only one from the organization present. I didn't really have a coach there. We didn't have our federation president there, or we didn't have any other athletes. It was just me representing Guam. Besides the coach, the lead specialist, Vicky, who is our female lead specialist, and me, everyone else has been climbing for less than a year. He told us that Akio Noguchi started climbing because she visited Guam. If you feel like you've started too late, I mean, ideally you want to start early, but it's never too late to try and become something bigger.
Welcome to another episode of the That's Not Real Climbing podcast. I'm your host, Jenny, and I'm excited to introduce my first in-person guest, Alan Lechtauen. I know Alan from our climbing training class in San Diego, but he is also a boulder for a brand new IFSC Federation, Team Guam. In this episode, we'll learn about what it's like competing on the World Cup circuit as an average climber who only started climbing at 23 years old and works a full-time engineering job. We'll also hear about what it's like as a new competitor competing in Innsbruck, including the after parties, and we'll learn all about the Guam climbing scene. If you're watching this on YouTube, you might notice some strange cuts to help the podcast flow better for audio only, but hopefully the appearances made by the cat will help make up for it. I hope you enjoy this episode with Alan. How was the climbing session?
It was good. You're talking about today's session?
Yeah,
today. Oh, yeah, climbing session today was good. Since I'm still recovering from a finger injury, a minor finger injury, I felt pretty nice. In the main bouldering area, I was able to kind of climb without the tape on. So I've been slowly, progressively overloading it with tape and then without tape. And it's been getting better. So session today was good. Yeah. And you? How was your session?
I was happy to do most of the B boulders on the slab.
Did you try the other B boulders on the overhang?
I did one that Darren recommended to me, and then another one that was a little too hard because my fingers were kind of hurting today. So, for those who don't know, I think a lot of people probably don't know you super well.
So, I wouldn't expect people to know me already, but.
Yeah.
I'm still new to the circuit, so
maybe people who watch who like know you in person.
Yeah.
So how did you get into climbing and competing?
So I picked up climbing back in 2018 while I was in college.
Fairly recent.
Fairly recent. Only been 6 years. Almost 6 years. I'm going on six. It was my best friend in college, his sister climbed. And so when I went to their place for Thanksgiving, it was they brought me to one of the climbing gyms up there, and it's in Santa Rosa. And so then I picked up it there, and then I started climbing at school. We had a climbing wall on campus, and then at the local climbing gym that everyone went to.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I picked it up. And then, yeah, since then, I've been mainly training for outdoors, so a lot of my training started focus on outdoors, especially later on as I got better in climbing. I think my first outdoor trip was maybe 6 months into climbing, five or 6 months into climbing outdoors. And then I got strong pretty quick, then got injured.
Oh, that's a classic. Yeah.
The classic got too strong too fast, then got injured. Then you don't, if you're not still new to climbing,
yeah,
trying to figure out a good protocol to heal faster and like get stronger as you're still injured was not in my mindset yet. So then I kind of went back in strength. But I got, in that time, I got better at slopers than I was in crimps. So then now, that's why now I would say my favorite is the sloper.
Really?
Yeah. And then got back up to speed right before COVID, then COVID hit. And then during that time in COVID, I just recently moved down here to San Diego and then started working as a full-time engineer. So then in that time frame, it was hard to train because the gyms were closed. And if the gyms were open, you would have to schedule maybe like only a 1 hour period of training.
Yeah,
and that was only, you're only allowed 1 hour training twice a week. So then you'd only train 2 hours a week. And that was hard, especially if you didn't have a home wall, like everyone started building home walls. I was like living in a house that my roommate's parents owned.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't really want to build in their backyard.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to take up their space. And plus, you know, knowing that I might have to move in the future, I didn't want to have to deal with that. So it's like, so then most of my training was delayed at that point and then picked up speed again in like 2021. And then slowly got better towards this year. Yeah.
And I remember those days.
Yeah.
And I had to schedule. But I don't think we had a limit in terms of how many sessions you could have.
Oh, really? The gyms. Yeah.
An hour?
Yeah, hour, an hour and a half. It was pretty bad. It was like, I mean, before it was like, you'd warm up for like 5 minutes on like easy problems and then you'd project for the next 45 to like an hour and a half. And it's just like, it was tough during those times. So then I would try and climb outside, but then I was still new to my full-time job. So then it was hard to balance that. And so then there's still some like hardships in my whole climbing career, but then I'm glad that I was able to pick it up again recently.
Mm-hmm.
And then switch to comp climbing once the Guam team was made. And like, once I found out that Guam created a team and recently got accepted into the IFSC, which was last year. So technically I've only been comp climbing for the last 9 months.
Okay. So you pretty much only boulder. Have you ever considered doing lead competition?
I have. Yeah. When the Guam team went for the Oceania qualifiers for the Olympics, it was a combined format. So then I had to train a little bit of lead and kind of get back up to speed. By preference, I don't usually train lead.
Mm-hmm.
I thought about it to supplement my bouldering.
Yeah.
As in like, because I don't have a lot of endurance in climbing, like normally, like, you know, the typical boulder saying is like, you go up three clips and you're already pumped.
Yeah.
That's me. I've definitely, when I started out climbing, I was thinking I would end up being a lead specialist, which is
why.
I mean, I bought like a whole bunch of like carabiners, quick draws, and I bought a rope to climb in the gym. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I liked it. I didn't do it all the time, but I would occasionally hop on ropes when I wouldn't like oppose it, when friends would offer to, you know, climb on ropes. And I mean, I enjoyed it back then, but now it's like, I prefer just bouldering most of the time, because it's easier access.
That's true.
In terms of like having to find a partner, you know, scheduling with someone else to, scheduling with someone else that, you know, you trust belaying you,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's hard to do that rather than, I mean, people still trust other people to belay them when you do the open sign-up sheets in some gyms. It's like, okay. But I mean, like, I like to climb with other people that I know that can take care of me and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, that's one main reason why I ended up just leaning more towards bouldering. And I mean, also it's just, I feel like I'm more of like a powerful style movement versus like long endurance climbs.
Mm.
Even in general, I've noticed that in other sports too. And that's why I've always, I've thought about like, maybe I should try speed.
Yeah.
But I mean, maybe. I mean, I used to play volleyball in high school and I have strong legs, so maybe I could implement that in speed climbing, but we'll see.
Yeah.
Well, that's still in the thought process if I want to ever try it out.
Yeah. Well, I guess I also wonder, because it seems like lead competitors tend to have a little bit more longevity in
the sport right. of weed.
That makes, yeah.
And how old are you? You're like...
29. I just turned 29 this year. Yeah.
I thought you were 28.
No, I... So that surprised me. Don't remind me.
So, like, you're getting pretty, like, super old. Like...
I mean, I don't like to think...
Really elderly. Like, you're about to die. So
stop it. No. I mean, I don't like to think of that. I like to... I don't like to think about the age. I mean... It's a nice little fallback of an excuse to,
yeah.
I'm not having a good day because of my age, yeah. You know, or like I'm having a bad session because, like, you know, for my age, I'm pretty tired for the session,
yeah.
Like, you know, so I have some friends that are like younger than me or older than me too. Like they are just one, they're always wonder or ask me and say, how do you have the stamina to, or the energy to like do these 3 hour sessions, 3 to 4 hour sessions, 4 to 5 days a week.
And yeah,
like, you know, like that's, it's a lot of training, but you know, I mean, it's the matter of fact is like, I'm enjoying it, mm-hmm. You know, like yes, I'm tired, but that's the fun part about it. It's like, I enjoy it a lot. And that's the reason why I picked up the comp climbing is because I know that it's like something that I want. And it's like, I've always had this in the back of my mind that I wanted to somehow represent Guam in a way that could bring climbing, like grow the climbing community back home.
Yeah.
I mean, during COVID, I had already had thoughts of like, oh, I want to try and open a gym back home. And then the first time I went back home during COVID, I recently found out that they had like a whole climbing community that I didn't know about. And it's been around since like, I think it's the 80s, but, and I was like, where has this been my whole life? Yeah. I would have picked up climbing way earlier, but I guess it wasn't like well advertised or it was like a Facebook group. So then it was word of mouth.
Yeah.
You know, you have to ask the right people, uh-huh. Come across the right people that knew about the community. And then when they finally opened up the gym, I was like, oh, someone did it before me, but I wonder who it was. And then they started like picking up. And I mean, that's another fact that is like the Guam climbing community is very, very new.
Mm-hmm.
Like the gym only opened up a year and a half ago. They just recently had their first year anniversary.
Wait, so that's like the first gym?
The first like, well, I guess... advertised gym, I guess, like because like there apparently there was an older gym that was open before the new gym opened up.
Mm-hmm.
It's like one of those like garage style bouldering gyms that someone owned. Maybe it was, I can't remember if it was like in a empty tenant space or if it was at someone's house. Mm-hmm. I can't remember what the correct fact of that is, but I just recently found out that too, and I was like, wow, I didn't even know that. But yeah, it when they opened up the gym, it was like a small section, the owner of the gym is he plays badminton, and so part of the gym is half badminton, half climbing, and so there was a small section of the badminton courts where it's just like a small maybe. I don't know how many meters, but it's just like a small section of boulders. Mm-hmm. And then this year, right after the Oceanic qualifier, last year, right after the Oceanic qualifiers, they expanded all, like they basically closed off half of the badminton courts. Half the gym is now fully half badminton, half climbing. And I mean, and the gym is pretty big. It's like a warehouse.
Yeah.
So it's growing, and like a lot more people have been drawing attention to it, and you know, and that's why like I really want this is because I want to help be part of the history and like help grow the climbing community back home. Mm-hmm. While there is still a small community out here that people from Guam in the mainland US that do climb, yeah, and they reached out to me, and some of them I went to high school with, some of them I haven't, and they reached out to me through the Climbing Guam Instagram, and they're like, because they've been posting about me, about going to the Innsbruck World Cup and stuff like that. Yeah. So then I've been getting reached out to about that and be like, how can I be part of the team? Mm-hmm. And then like even the Guam coach, he's like, dude, ever since like you, like we've been posting about you, like people have been reaching out to us, you know, how can we be part of the team, or how can we like help out the team? Yeah. And that's kind of what I want. It's like, I want people to like notice it a little bit more,
yeah,
so that eventually the next generation of climbers that are coming from Guam don't have to worry about it so much. Like, you know, that, you know, it's already like it, you know, we take small steps, and that's yeah, as a team, that's what we want, is we want to grow the whole community. And I mean, it would have been nice to have that growing up as myself.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
And so it's just like, oh, okay, I want this for the future. I'm Guam. I mean, there is a community there. I mean, and the hard part about that is I'm here,
yeah,
training
quite far.
I'm here training basically to kind of gain, I don't know how to say it, but like just to like better myself, to get the experience out, yeah, here, so that I can like maybe go back there, and maybe in the future I'll probably want to coach,
yeah,
the team, or set, you know, or set. I can be an engineer back home too, mm-hmm, and then coach in the after hours, you know. I mean, mm-hmm, because I have that passion for climbing, you know,
yeah,
it's something that I want for Guam. Yeah,
yeah, that makes sense. Because I mean, if that experience and like the people who are experienced don't eventually go back to build it up,
yeah,
it's never gonna
yeah, grow. Or it's almost like, I don't want to say it's a wasted effort, but that's what it would feel like.
Yeah,
yeah,
you know? Okay. Well, we'll get into Guam more in a bit, but first,
one of the things to me that was most interesting about your story is that unlike most athletes on the circuit, you didn't start out as a youth climber. You started when you were 23, I guess, 22?
23, I would say 23, yeah.
Yeah, which is quite late. Actually, that's later than me, because I think I started when I was 20. So do you feel like you missed out on much starting as an adult? Or how, well, of course you did. How much,
yeah,
do you,
I
feel
mean,
like you,
yeah,
missed,
I,
out on starting as,
I mean,
an adult?
Yes, I have missed out on a lot, as if like that, I mean, that's why I mentioned wanting this for Guam, is to kind of start a youth, like a youth gathering for the climbing, because I mean, most of the climbing team right now is all adults, and I'm not even the oldest one.
Whoa, really?
Yeah, yeah,
okay.
I'm not even the
well,
oldest
we need
one.
To get into that later.
We'll get into that later, yeah. But I'm not even the oldest one, but yeah, I mean, it definitely feels like, it seems like it's a little too late, a little bit. Like I started late, but I personally, I don't like to think about age as like a, I don't want it like as an excuse to be like, oh, you know, I'm not good enough because, you know, I started too late. You know, I mean, it used to be like that kind of excuse before when I got injured and, you know, started climbing. I was like, you know, I feel like I might be too old, like get stronger. And maybe, yes, it does play a factor, but having that excuse is not part of my mindset. Cause I like to think of like, it's never too late to, you know, if you believe in something that you want to do, you know, age shouldn't stop you starting too late shouldn't stop you. I do think I started too late, but I don't think it's too late to succeed in something that to this level.
And I think similar to a lot of people who started climbing late, and probably a lot of people who are like watching or listening right now, mm-hmm, you also mentioned that you have a full-time job.
Yeah.
So you're kind of like the weekend warrior, I think that's the term for it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think there are a lot of like weekend warriors who manage to climb hard in the outdoor scene.
Yeah.
But you don't hear of that so much in competition, partially because they're young, but also partially because it's like very time consuming to be, I guess like in competition, you kind of have to be good at everything instead of,
yeah,
just projecting like one specific boulder for a long time. Mm-hmm. So how do you balance work and training?
Balancing work and training is kind of difficult. I would say it's a difficult topic to even like delve into, because normally the balance is by feel. Like I I'll go into work and like do my engineering job, and then I'll have to reset my mind and then go to the gym and then kind of try and lock in, you know, which is why I kind of like take the training class that we take, because it's kind of nice to have someone tell you what to do in training, versus like training on your own. So I kind of have more days. I try to have more days where I'm training with someone rather than training with someone else. That way I have to think a little bit less, where I can just bounce back and forth, change ideas, stuff like that. And then in the training class, I just have someone telling me like the workouts, what to do. But like balancing work and climbing is very, I would say the hard part of it is having the energy every day to try and and balance everything, because I mean, by the end of the day of like, because I mean, realistically, I mean, I work a 9 to 5, but realistically I only work 6 hours mainly, because two of those hours,
I want that going out on the internet.
In, like I'm at work for 8 hours, but like I'm locked in for six. For like the first hour is like me trying to like calm myself, like get into the mindset of getting into work. And at the last hour of the day, I'm trying to like ease down and like get ready for training, right? So that's 6 hours of work, hour in between, and then I have the hour lunch. So it's a 9 hour day, but like 6 hours of mainly working.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, and that's, you try to break it down into that so that you can kind of like get into different cycles, phases in the day to like when to train yourself to like when to lock into work and then when to log out of work, and then trying to make sure you stay log out of work so you don't have to think about whatever you're working on and you just worry about that tomorrow. And then you kind of lock in the training. And then when you're in training, kind of like say like, oh, I should have sent something. I'm like working on a project. Oh, I should have sent it. Blah, blah, blah. I try to like leave that out of my mind and just kind of be present a little bit. Because if I don't, then I'm just going to have a bad session.
Yeah.
And it's, and that's the hard part too in training. It's like sometimes coming from being an outside climber to becoming a competition climber, the transition was a little bit difficult for me, because in competition climbing, you want to flash you want to flash the problem ideally. And then in outdoor setting, it's more of like, enjoying the process of projecting. You know, I mean, yeah, sure, it'd be nice to flash a boulder outside or whatever. But what makes outdoor climbing very fun is the process of projecting, being able to tweak beta and sit there and just admire the boulder boulder route, and then just kind of climb it once you go for the red point and kind of enjoy that. But in comp climbing, you either try it within that session, like in a competition setting, especially in World Cup setting, it's like you either do it or you don't, because it's going to be gone in the next few hours.
Yeah.
You know, or it's going to be gone the next day. And you kind of have to like, you have to learn how to let go of the things that you didn't send, and just kind of take what you learned from that experience and then kind of going back and reflecting off of it, but don't dwell on it and say, like, see what you can improve on. And I mean, that's the same thing with balancing work and training. It's like, you kind of have to go in and out of those phases and then kind of forgetting what you, like the mistakes you made prior, and then kind of moving forward and see how you can improve.
Okay. So what does your training look like right now with your work schedule?
Coming up to Innsbruck, it's like 3 days on, straight, 1 day rest, 2 days on, then rest. So I'll do a 3-2 week, basically. Mondays rest days, Fridays rest days, and then all the days in between are workout days.
How tired do you feel third day on? Because I never told you this, but my benchmark for my climbing was that I wanted to climb harder than you if you were third day on.
That's a weird benchmark to say.
Need some kind of like comparison, otherwise I have no motivation.
I mean, that's fair, because I mean, I sometimes I'll compare myself to Darren.
Yeah, exactly.
Darren's one of our strong friends in the class. I mean, it depends on how well I slept the days prior, or how well I eat in a week. I mean, that's another hard thing about balancing the life and work, the work and training, is trying to find a way to like fit in cooking and, or like,
oh,
you know, cooking. And then, like, 'cause like after a session, I'll be home. I'll like, session ends at 9.
Yeah.
I'll get home at like 9:30.
Yeah.
Cook.
Oh, you eat after.
Yeah.
I eat after. Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, I eat after.
Yeah, it starts early because 6 is like right after work.
Yeah, 6 is right after work. I mean, I'm not gonna have.
Oh, no wonder you always eat a snack during class.
Yeah, I always. That's my snack during class.
Gotcha. Yeah,
and if I don't buy a snack during class, then I'm just hungry the whole time.
Yeah.
Or I'll just eat like a late lunch.
Yeah.
Like I'll eat at like 2 or 3, and then I'll just, because you know, I just, I'm locked in at work and I just like, I can't find the time to eat. I'm just like, I'll wait till like later.
Yeah.
I'll eat my lunch then. And I'll be like, okay, I'll strategically place my lunch right before class so that I'm not as hungry during class. And then eat dinner late. But yeah, that's what would dictate how tired I would be on the third day. I mean, it's different from when I started training out at the beginning of the year. I was doing 6 days on.
Yeah.
And that was a bad idea. Thinking that, like, my mindset was like, oh, more climbing, I can do this. Oh, more training means I'm going to get better faster. But that, don't ever do that.
Yeah.
Like, don't ever, I don't know why I thought that. I mean, I did help a little bit, but it started doing a lot of overuse injuries. Not injuries, but, like, I started having aches.
Yeah.
And, like, as I slowly got out of that and started doing just 5 days on, but doing of quality training, but then having good rest in between, I started feeling a little bit better. And that's a key thing. It's like, warm up properly. If I don't warm up properly, then I'm going to have a bad session. If I warm up properly, it doesn't matter how tired I am, I'm still going to have a decent session if I warm up.
Hmm.
And I use my warm up as a gauge of how well I'm going to be, how well I feel I'm going to be doing that day. And I adjust accordingly, where it's like, oh, I'm feeling really great, I'm going to try really, really hard. Doesn't matter how hard the problem is, or how hard these moves are going to be, or whatever workout we're going to do, I'm going to try hard.
Okay.
Yeah. And then if I'm feeling pretty crappy during warm up, then I'm just like, okay, I'm just going to dial it down a little bit, still try hard, but don't overdo it. Otherwise, I'm just going to force an injury.
Yeah.
You know, try hard enough that you don't get injured.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think these are like old people thoughts though? Because a lot of the pros do 6 days and like double sessions.
I mean, I've recently been thinking about the 5 days on with double sessions on some days, like just to split up the time.
Yeah.
Like, 'cause I don't want to do a 3-hour session, but then half of that session is a strength training workout. You know, I want to do like maybe three hours of quality climbing session.
Yeah.
And then maybe do like the workout in the morning. You know, feel fresh, like do the workout, rest a little bit during the day, during work, and then go into the climbing session, like full on. And that's something that I've been thinking of recently. I'm still trying to plan that out. And I mean, I have a training journal. I don't really write into it. I just like, all I write into it is, this is the days I'm going to go climb. This is the workouts I'm going to do. That's it. And then I close the book and then remember everything. Forget about the book.
Okay, great.
I'll go back to it once in a while and be like, okay, I'll write my PRs.
Okay, yeah.
Like max pull-ups, how much weight I'm using to train, and how I want to increase that over time. I mean, this is just me as like starting out. Like, you know, I'm experimenting with myself, because like, I mean, we have Coach Enrico helping us like train, and I get ideas of workouts from him. But a lot of the training that I do is basically kind of, I'm personally putting it together for myself, because I know myself, I know my body pretty well, and I know how to adjust accordingly whenever I'm feeling something's not working out.
Yeah. So in terms of coaching, did you ever have a coach, or like currently have a coach?
I mean, I consider Coach Enrico as a coach.
Okay. Well, like, you know, it's like very, it's different when it's kind of as a group versus like a personal.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't think I don't think I've ever had like a personal coach, like tell me specifically, this is what you're going to do. I mean, eventually I kind of want to go into that because I just, you know, once I get to a certain point, it's like, if I feel like I'm plateauing, I might just like, kind of like
become a coach,
like get coaching.
Oh, okay.
Like
yeah.
Full coaching, like invest in full time coaching. Like this is,
yeah,
like one on one coaching.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to find what I prefer, one on one coaching, but yeah. it's hard to find that because a lot of the training plans that people put together today, it's usually just given to athletes. Especially like for people climbing outside, you know.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. But well, like, I don't know, like for climbing, for competitions, I don't know the outlets to look for. Like I normally just start Googling things, but then at that point, I'm like, I'm already planning for myself.
Sure. I mean, I guess when I'm thinking of coaching, I'm not necessarily thinking like, oh, someone who just writes a training plan for you, but someone who's like watching you climb and giving you feedback on your climbing and what you're doing wrong, mm-hmm. for like a full hour instead of like,
eventually I might want to do it in one-on-one, but yeah. But I still like the group setting because in the group setting it feels nice because you have other people cheering you on, you know, you have a sense of, and I mean that's why I like climbing. It's like the sense of community kind of bouncing off ideas off of each other, even though maybe some data might not work for you, but at least you know, based on like, you know, based on their body structure, I guess, and like length, height, stuff like that. Because it helps later down the line if I ever want to coach. It's like, oh, maybe I know a certain beta for a certain person because this is like your size that fits your box well. You know, or if it doesn't fit your box, then let's adjust that accordingly based because I've talked to other climbers and what their thoughts are, their thought processes. And that's why I like the group setting. But it'd be nice to just have this one-on-one.
Yeah, you should try one. Yeah. I mean, Enrico does one-on-ones.
Yeah. I still have to ask him, but I'm just always having fun in the class. I always forget.
It is.
I always forget. No, one day, eventually.
So, getting to your IFSC experience, I've been waiting forever to hear about this because Innsbruck was a little while ago. Please excuse this brief intermission, but I've gotten a few requests for this, so I just wanted to announce that if you're interested in helping support the show, my Patreon page is now live. Some perks include ad-free, interruption-free episodes, deleted scenes, prioritized guest questions, or the ability to submit video questions, an enamel pin shipped to you after 2 months of membership, and much more to come. The proceeds go back into the podcast to help me break even, and they help improve the experience of the guests. If you'd like to support the podcast non-monetarily, liking, commenting, and sharing helps a great deal as well. Back to the show. So yeah, you just recently went to your first ever World Cup for bouldering in Innsbruck, which is also kind of like a crazy first venue because I think there are more approachable ones where like Salt Lake is like closer at least.
Salt Lake is closer. I was supposed to go to that, but I think the funding for the organization for the Guam organization was not there yet. So then they were trying to figure out how to fund the athletes and stuff like that. So then I just had to wait for the right time to go. And I think Innsbruck was a nice experience to go to, even though talking to some of the climbers there, they're like, oh, it's quite the choice to start at Innsbruck. And even like people outside the circuit or like setters that I like, Jesse at Flux.
Okay.
I mean, Jesse at Flux, he was like, Innsbruck was quite the choice because I've heard this from a lot of climbers that Innsbruck is supposed to be one of the hardest World Cups out of the whole circuit, apparently. Not to my knowledge. I didn't know that, but I was just like, oh, Innsbruck is like a nice place to be.
Yeah.
And a lot of people like to go to that World Cup. It'd be a nice opportunity to meet other climbers in the circuit and just kind of learn from that experience. Plus, I mean, Sometimes you just gotta start hard.
I mean, yeah. I mean, it's totally fine.
Yeah.
It's, yeah. I just thought, you know, Salt Lake might make more sense.
Yeah, Salt Lake
it would just be easier.
It would have been easier to go to.
But yeah, so since you're brand new to the circuit, I guess take me through the entire process of the comp. Because, like, I've interviewed more seasoned athletes, but they're, like, so used to it that they don't really, they're just, they know what it's like. So for you, not having been to any before, like, what was it like? Did anything, like, surprise you?
Yeah, I guess, like, the timing of when you want to go to the country or city that you're, that the World Cup's going to be in. Because, like, you know, you need some time to acclimate
yeah.
to the time zone, get used to the, you know, get into the groove again after doing a long flight. I mean, from here.
Oh, this is long.
Yeah. If I mean, like, from here to Europe, it's like a 10-hour flight, depending on where you go. And then, you know, you have to kind of acclimate after that, like, from sitting down the whole time, you know, eating, if you don't bring food with you or snacks with you, eating airport food.
Yeah.
You know, trying to reacclimate, getting used to the surroundings, you know, learning your way towards the gym.
Yeah, exactly.
Stuff like that. It gets a little stressful. So the timing of when you get to the country or city kind of plays a little bit into how well you lean into the competition.
How early did you go?
I would say I got there maybe 5-6 days before.
Oh, that's so not early enough.
It's not. I mean, a lot of the athletes that I saw there, that I met there, some of them were there for like maybe a week and a half to 2 weeks before. I mean, some of them train there regularly, so they're either there a month before, you know. So it depends on who that depends on the athletes and what fits their budget and stuff like that, or what fits their time frame. I mean, for me, working as an engineer, I kind of have to time it where, okay, I'm gonna leave after a full week of work. So I'll probably leave on a Friday or Saturday and then get there and then acclimate. And then, you know, and then, like, you know, if I'm there like a week or two before, I'm still going to be working remote.
Oh, you still worked?
Yeah. Oh, I know. No.
Oh, okay.
No, because this was my first one, my first World Cup, and I was the only one from the organization present.
Yeah.
It was I didn't really have a coach there. We didn't have our federation president there. We didn't have any other athletes. It was just me representing Guam. So I wanted my full attention for the whole thing, like the whole event.
Yeah.
So basically the whole 2 weeks I was in Innsbruck, I just took, but I regularly, like whenever I go, when I travel a lot to other countries, or, you know, when I'm on like training, sometimes I'll go to visit family. In Europe.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Or like, you know, or like if I'm going on a climbing trip to like either train at another gym or, you know, go home to Guam, I will normally work remote.
Okay. Everything yeah, that just, makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes
I mean, sense. Somehow got to pay for travel. but I mean, that was, yeah. So then timing it was one of it. And then getting, because it was my first time, it's like sometimes it does suck when you're in a new setting like that for the first time. Trying to know someone is key a little bit.
Yeah.
Like trying to get to know either people on the circuit, or if you're training at the gym before, you know, before the event, try to make maybe like a friend.
Yeah. And I mean, gym, going so alone kinda, is crazy.
Yeah. It's like you're in a new setting, you don't know anyone at the gym. And, you know, obviously it's your first time on the circuit, and like me not being part of the youth circuit or anything like that, no one really knows me. So then it's just like, it does become a little bit nerve wracking. That's like one thing I kind of focused on once I got there, is kind of get into a group, get to know people, or get to know at least someone. But I mean, luckily I have a friend that lives in Innsbruck, so then I did have some sessions with him prior to the event, so then it kind of eased some nerves. But yeah, like the first session I had at the gym, I was like, my heart was racing. I was like, oh my God, it's sinking in. And by the second day, I had the session with my friend, and then it was like, oh, okay, everything's relaxed. Slowly, like I'm starting to relax a little bit. And then by the time I got into ISO, I made some friends that who are from other countries that are on the circuit. Also, it's their debut, or they've been on the circuit for like maybe one or two World Cups. They've been to one or two World Cups, and got to know them a little bit more. Got to learn some of their struggles or struggles within their organization in terms of like other stuff. And so it was like kind of nice to have those kind of conversations with other countries. And then that kind of like, by the time I was in ISO, I didn't think of anything. Like everything was kind of relaxed. It was very nice to see all of the big names in ISO and during training sessions that like in the gym that are like also, they're also like training for the World Cup. Kind of, it was definitely a little bit nerve wracking, but it's like after you see them once, it's like, cool. We're just all climbers, you know. It's like it takes some time to sink in, but once it sinks in, it's like you're slowly locking in.
So like when you saw the big names like warming up, did that mess with your mind at all?
Days prior, sort of, but not on ISO day.
Oh really?
Okay. Yeah. I mean, you already know the skill level and you know the skill gap, but it's like, you know, you're there. Like for me personally, it was like, I'm there to learn from the experience, and I'm there to also just try hard and see how much my training has been for the past 6 months prior has been doing compared to, because I mean, I use Innsbruck as a benchmark to see how my training has been working throughout the 6 months after, 6-7 months after the Oceania qualifiers. I did okay at the Oceania qualifiers. And then coming into Innsbruck, where it's the hardest, one of the hardest World Cups, I think I did okay.
Yeah.
I could have done better, but because it was my first competition, it was the key points that I, you know, that people normally would look for, it's like never crossed my mind. But after doing it, it's like, oh, you know, when you're on the floor, like switching beta up, something like you kind of, I've talked to this about with Enrico, where it's like, that's how you can tell from the elite and advanced like climbers, where sometimes the elite climbers can change beta mid move, you know, or like even in a dyno movement, they can probably change their beta mid air. Potentially,
okay.
But I mean,
that's, I don't know. Yeah, sure, maybe.
I mean, I don't know for sure, but that's like an idea to think about it. Like, you know, but like me, I'm like changing beta while I'm on the floor.
Sure, yeah.
Not while I'm on the wall, because like I'm not searching for the right. I mean, I was, but in some of the movements that you're doing during comps, you're doing a dyno, or you're doing like, it's hard to make those micro adjustments in the air.
Yeah,
and think about it once you're on the ground, because you tend to be like, oh, that works. And you get stuck in a loop of like, okay, I'm going to keep trying it. And, you know, almost works one time. So then you get stuck into that groove. I mean, you've competed. You know how that feels. Yeah. You know how that feels.
Well, I don't really have so much time pressure, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we had 5 minutes on the wall in qualifications. I mean, 5 minutes is a rough time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's not enough time to like try and set it, but I mean, it's like the time to like try and like give it your all. And definitely after my qualification round, I felt like I ran like 5 miles.
Yeah.
I was like out of breath. I was gasping for air. I mean, cause a lot of it was just fighting on the wall. And my friend that lives in Innsbruck that was in the crowd cheering me on, he was like, dude, what is it? He was like, what is it? How does it feel to be up there on the stage? And I was like, honestly, like once you're standing on the stage, like when I was up there, for me, it was like, I'm seeing the boulder that I'm going to climb, but then I'm also seeing someone top next to me, someone trying and falling next to my right, and someone topping to my left. And so like I tried to funnel that out, and then he was like, do you hear the crowd? Like, do you ever like feel like the presence of the crowd? And I'm like, yeah, I do. But once I'm like focused on the climb, the audio of the crowd like just tunes out. Like, I don't hear it. All I hear is like if someone says my name.
Sure.
I mean, obviously, like someone's cheering my name, or you know, the announcer. That's it. But I mean, like even that, the announcer would be tuned out already. Because I'm so focused on the climb.
Yeah.
And I think that's just either that's a me thing or if it's something that other athletes may also have. But that personally, that's what happened. Like that's how I felt during the climbs.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's what you want. You don't want to be thinking about everything. You kind of only want to be thinking about the boulder.
Yeah.
But yeah, going back to ISO, since it was your first time, you're not ranked. You must have been in ISO for like ever.
Oh, well, so I thought I would have been, I'm not ranked, but then because I did the Oceania qualifier, I sort of was like a little bit bumped up into the site in the cycle. So I was like, not at the end, but I was near the end. And then some people that would never did youth world cups or, that didn't do the youth circuit and it's their first time, they were on like the end of the list.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So how long were you in ISO for?
I would say we got into ISO like around noon or like 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And I didn't get on till 8.
What?
Yeah. I mean, I was supposed to get on at 7, but then the rain,
whatever. Sure. Yeah.
It rained in the middle of ISO, so then people who were halfway through their climbs had to stop because it rained. I mean, we could have continued climbing, but then the venue was fully covered. It would have been nice to have further out because the mats were wet, which is why they stopped it. The boulders weren't wet, but yeah. So then everyone that was like maybe from 6 p.m. to 8 got pushed back an hour and a half.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that is so long, though. Yeah, that's actually longer than I thought.
Like, you have people like, I mean, it's funny to think about it, but people who are who start later in the qualification rounds, a lot of them take naps. A lot of them take naps, but sometimes it's nerve-wracking to take a nap because you might oversleep.
Okay.
Yeah, like one of the guys I met from the Indian team, he took a nap, and then he heard someone fall on the warm-up wall next to him, and he thought there was someone trying to wake him up that he didn't make the stop. But then he woke up, came back to us, and yeah, so we were joking around with him, and I was like, yeah, you should have just kept sleeping because it's raining.
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, we're delayed by we don't know how much longer. And we were hoping it would only be 30 minutes, but it turned out to be an hour and a half.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I mean, like a lot of people are, if they're later in the qualification round, they either take a nap or they start warming up like maybe an hour before.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
What did you do? Did you take a nap?
Well, to get my like energy going up, I warmed up with all the guys that were warming up ready to go.
You warmed up early then?
I warmed up early, but I didn't like, it was like a half-assed warm up.
Oh, okay.
Like I'm just like doing a band.
Oh, sure.
Workout. Okay. A band workout, but like a band warm up and then hanging on the hangboard. Because, I mean, like once I'm warmed up, it's quicker for me to warm up prior to, you know, game time. Yeah, because like I warmed up maybe like a good 15 minutes at the beginning and then rested for the next 8 hours. Rested for the next 8 hours. Well, 7 hours. And then I warmed up again prior.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it definitely sucks to be later in the time slot, but I mean, it is what it is.
Well, you also didn't have your phone, so
yeah, we don't have our phones. That's
you just sat around. I guess you talk to people.
You know, okay. We get to talk to people. Some people are playing like football, soccer in the warm up areas.
Yeah.
Or like we're playing, like we're getting to know each other. You know some of the climbers. Like I met the Thailand team. I think that's how you say his name. And then I met some like people from Cyprus, from the India team. And then, you know, I got to know people. It's actually the first time I met Al from the US team, the coach for C5.
I've seen him at the gym.
Yeah. Coaching C5, but then like it's the first time I met him and like actually introduced myself.
Yeah.
I met him there and it's like, you learn how to spend your time in ISO. A lot of the time, I actually talked to like some of the Japanese coaches there too, because they saw my shirt. And Japan's pretty close to Guam.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So then like they're like, oh, Guam. Yeah. Like, how many of you guys are here? And so they're like, oh, where's the rest of your team? Got to know them. ISO's pretty, it's an interesting, and I think it's different. It's a different experience for everybody. That was just my experience. Like, because I want to make friends with other countries and get to know them. Yeah, that way I have sense. That way the next time I go to World Cup,
you won't
like,
be so
lonely. I wouldn't feel so lonely.
Yeah. Okay. And so then going out into the first boulder, what was that like? First ever World Cup qualification boulder.
First boulder was actually, it was interesting because I looked at it, read it as a coordination boulder, and like I was throwing myself at the boulder. That's something that I struggled in the Oceania qualifiers is that, my coach, the Guam coach noticed that when I'm trying a boulder, I'm not going 100%. I'm like maybe giving like 80%, you know? So then I gave it 100% on the first boulder. I'm like throwing myself on the Cordo, the Cornition Dino, flying on the mats, but I'm like, looking at the boulder, and you know, I'm a little bit stumped for the first boulders.
Okay.
For the first boulder, because it's like first
yeah,
actual
course.
Boulder
yeah.
of the World Cup, and so I'm like sitting there stumped, and like I'm trying to read the beta. I'm like, ah, shoot, it's slowly sinking in. Like I gotta read this pretty quick. I give it full 100%. So then I'm like throwing myself at it. Didn't get it, but I felt close. And then, you know, after doing the whole qualification round, I talked to one of the Australian coaches. And he was like, and I was like, exchanging beta with him. I was like, how did the others do it? Like, did I read it correctly? Because I didn't have the Guam coach there, but yeah. And then I was like, I was definitely reading it wrong.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Because I read it right the first attempt and it didn't feel right for me. So then I tried it a different way and I stuck to that beta the second beta that I picked.
Do you have videos of your qualification attempts?
Yes, but I don't have them saved on my phone. I will eventually put that together in the post.
Okay. I want the videos, so.
Oh,
yeah.
It's just going to be a video of videos of me falling. Yeah.
I mean, but we also like can't see the qualification boulder.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's
I forgot. They should, I feel like they should air the qualification boulders, or at least do, do better highlights of all the athletes versus,
because you want to be on TV.
Yeah. At least get the exposure, especially for the people, for the countries that also have the same situation as Guam. You know, they're small.
Yeah, small.
They want to get the exposure, but it's hard to get that exposure if you're not, you're not higher up on the circuit or something like that. You know, it's hard to get that exposure.
So now going into let's get your least favorite moment from the comp first.
The after competition feel, like you feel like you could have just done better if you read the beta correctly, stuff like that.
Yeah.
I basically placed last place. I was placed 98, I think 97. I don't remember, but I mean, that was like already beyond me. But I guess at the moment it felt pretty bad.
Yeah. How did you feel about your performance compared to like yourself?
I felt like I did pretty well. Like I think it came down to like reading beta properly and adjusting beta properly. And then, I don't know. I think I did pretty well. I almost owned three of the problems. I think two of the problems. I was hoping to zone the two slab problem. Those were the two really close ones where I thought I was going to snag the zone and maybe top it. But
yeah.
I ended up reading the beta completely wrong because I went back, watched my video, and then watched how, like, I don't know, like the people who have been posting the sends on Instagram and watching their beta. I was like, man.
Yeah.
I knew I did it slightly wrong, but it was because a lot of the boulders, they kept the hand on while I was trying to coordination dyno on a slab. When it wasn't really intended, but you could do it that way, it just definitely makes it harder. Some of them kept the hand on. I was doing a shuffle on one of the other slabs where I kind of got this like little scar on my face.
Saw that.
A lot of the athletes that, like even the females.
Brooke like, always the, has something on her face.
Yeah, well, like everyone, like all, like you know who like fought on slab because yeah. you... Even like Jessie Pills had the cut scuff on her face, and like a bunch of the like I think John Won Chun's little brother, I forgot his name, but yeah, it was his debut too, and he had scuff on his face. Like I was like, oh, and the Cypress team guy, him and I were talking about it. It's like, oh, everyone has a little scar on their face. Yeah, and I was like, oh yeah, I was fighting hard on that slab because I was trying to shuffle and I kept scratching my face. On it, but there was a static beta to it. I didn't think of doing that. So it's like, I think reflecting off of it, I think the least favorite part is like me just not reading the beta properly.
So then favorite part?
I mean, sitting in the athlete's box, sitting at the with all the other World Cup athletes, kind of nice, like watching the semis, watching the finals, stuff like that. And then there's the after party.
Oh yeah.
And the after party.
Yeah, give me the dirt there.
I mean, it was fun. Like I got to know better like the some of the other the Thailand guy. I mean, yeah, the guy from Thailand. Some of the Australian team too that I didn't really make friends with back in the Oceania qualifiers. Got to hang out with them. Met some fans of the Australian team, hung out with me, and then like everyone was drinking, everyone was having a nice time, and then sharing the dance floor with everyone else was pretty interesting because I have a background in dancing, so
you could beat them in something.
I don't know. I mean, I did like I used to like because I used to compete in breakdancing, and so then when I told some of the Australian guys that I did do that. They're like, oh, you better. I'm not leaving the dance floor unless you bust a move. And so, I mean, I did that. It was kind of nice. There was like different dance circles going on. And so it was kind of cool. And then everyone was just like getting to know each other. Got to see like, I don't know, like Simon Lorenzi dancing on the dance floor. All the big names, like Hamish.
Oh, okay.
Animal. Who else is there? I can't remember. Like a bunch of the Austrian team, I think, yeah, a bunch of the German team and stuff like that were there. So it was kind of cool to share.
Had the best moves.
Wolf.
Okay, fair. Fine. Well, fair.
I don't know. I mean, I was the only one that did some breakdance moves on the floor, but everyone had some good moves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know how to go deeper into that, but yeah, it was fun. That I guess that was the most memorable because I got to kind of, it's a different experience, especially in that setting when everyone's so focused during the competition when everyone can just like relax during, you know, the after party. It's kind of nice.
Okay. And favorite moment during the comp?
I mean, being there, going through every single boulder was great. And then knowing that I basically gave it my all was like, that's like the most memorable and my most favorite. I mean, being there is already like an honor.
Yeah.
So it's, I mean, yeah, I don't know what else to say.
Yeah,
that's my favorite part. Like being able to try those boulders and have a crowd watch was nice. And then having a friend in the crowd and the Australian team coaches cheer on, you know, at least having someone cheering your name during the comp is also nice too. Yeah. So, I mean, it feels in the moment kind of thing. It's hard to describe.
Yeah. It's like a, I made it here moment.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I made it here moment, you know, like I'm like, it shows that like, you know, hard work does pay off, you know, and it encourages you to try harder, you know, and, you know, and that's what I want in the game, the experience.
Yeah. Oh, I wish I could have that moment.
It's hard. I mean, that a lot of people are like, you know, like, and that's the crazy thing too, because living here in San Diego and meeting people who are like way stronger than me, or like, you know, climbing with people who are way stronger than me, you know. And I mean, they sometimes, you know, some people just choose not to compete and, you know, like to just climb outside. But like, it's crazy to think that I myself is representing Guam and, you know, and I, you know, and climbing with people who are as strong as I am and, or like stronger. And it's crazy to think that like not everyone gets that opportunity. And I feel very honored and I don't know if I could say, would say lucky, but like, you know, like it's just crazy to think about like the timing of it all too. Like, you know, I just like having, like seeing Guam slowly building up to maybe like, you know, being part of the circuit is great.
Yeah. I guess, do you ever feel kind of like weird that you, I don't know, like that you're able to like be on the World Cup circuit, even though when you climb here, sometimes you like lose the comps? I don't know how to phrase that any better.
I know what I mean. I know what you mean, and it definitely feels odd. But I mean,
I don't take what you can get, I guess.
Yeah, take what you can get, but like you take every opportunity that you can, if you have it available to you, because you know you have nothing to lose realistically. Like you're going in for the experience to become a better climber, right? And
to build it up for
and,
Guam,
and to
so,
build it
yeah.
up and you know I mean like a lot of the guys here, a lot of my friends here are like, don't have the imposter syndrome, you know. Don't think that you don't deserve either, because hey, you're one of the stronger climbers, one of the stronger climbers from Guam. You know, they want you to represent Guam. You know, they, you know, all this stuff, and I'm like, okay, yeah, it's nice to think of that. You know, even though you know, there's definitely other people that could be on the world circuit, but you know, but then the pool within their country or whatever, you know, is stacked.
Yeah,
you know, it's crazy. But I mean, like, you know, Guam is still new to climbing, so you know, you take every opportunity that you can get so that you can build it to be even stronger, you know. So I mean, sure, I have those thoughts in my head, it's like, why am I even here? But I mean, like, it's for the greater good, for, you know, it's for something even bigger. Like, I think there's a bigger picture to it, and I'm like a small piece of it, you know. So
yeah. And I guess it's also like sort of based on the opportunities that you grew up with, because you didn't have climbing there.
Yeah.
And then obviously, like, here in the U.S., it's already a lot more established. So you've kind of always had those opportunities.
Yeah, and it sort of, like, makes me hungry for more climbing, you know? Like, it's like, I feel like it, it's weird to say it like this, but it's like, it feels like it's supplementing my, like, my drive to climb even harder. You know, like I used to think, like, oh, B10 is impossible, or, like, you know,
I used to think that
you know, anything past, like, B10 is going to be so unreachable for me. And, like, you know, recently I've gotten so much better, and, like, I'm slowly reaching higher grades and stuff like that outside, and, you know, I'm slowly, like, executing my moves in comp style stuff. And, you know, it's like, there's no, you can visualize the ceiling, but, you know, you could still go past it, you know. And that's my thought process on that. It's like, you know, if you can take the opportunity, you can break past your ceiling that you're seeing, that, you know, maybe you can be better.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good statement.
Yeah.
Okay, do you want to talk about the Climbing Gems chalk bag that you received?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so this is a chalk bag from Climbing Gems. The owner of Climbing Gems, her name's Ange, and she's from Australia. The Guam team met her during the Oceania qualifiers, and then that's where the friendship started. We followed each other on Instagram. We shared back and forth stuff like, oh, you know, like chalk bag talk and like climbing talk and stuff like that. And then when I posted that I was heading to Innsbruck, she messaged me. It's like, oh man, it would have been great to have someone, you know, test out my chalk bucket, because she has the paraclimber. I forgot the paraclimber from the great GB team.
Anita.
Yeah. She sent her to test it out on the paraclimbing elite. And so she's like, oh, I wish someone would test out my bouldering bag.
Right, okay.
Or, you know, the chalk bucket. And I was like, I can test it out, but I think it might be too late for you to ship it. I'm literally on my flight to Innsbruck. And she's like, don't worry, I'll figure something out. So she literally makes this while I'm on the flight.
Whoa.
Express ships it to my Airbnb in Innsbruck. And she's like, hopefully it gets to you on time.
Because you were only there 5 days in advance.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, wait, 5 days. Well, 5-6 days in advance. And I was like, oh, I don't think it's going to make it. And so she sends it. And literally the day before, it got to the door. And I was like, oh, it's meant to be. And so I got to test it out. It's really nice. I like it's very different because, I mean, a lot of companies do the magnetic enclosure. But because it's still like a, I guess you could say, prototype model, I got to test it out, and there's definitely things to change on it. But, you know, that was part of the conversation, is that I was supposed to test it out and give her feedback, you know, and stuff like that. And it's really nice because the material of the shirt that she used, I mean, this is the logo of the brand, and the shirt is like really high duty. It's like heavy duty and a lot of people, I've been getting a lot of comments on it, of people wondering, is it Tyvek or not? I was like, no, it's a t-shirt.
What is Tyvek?
Tyvek's the fabric you underlay your tent with.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And so I was like, no. It's a t-shirt. So that, I mean, like, at least the fabric that she uses for her t-shirts are very high quality. And then the magnetic enclosure is pretty strong, not too strong that you can't, it's a hard time opening it.
Yeah. Maybe after a long session.
Yeah, I mean, after a long session. But at least, like, most of the time, like, when I throw my bag down and it closes, it's kind of nice, especially if you're worried about chalk falling out. It has, like, this nice little feature of the jeans at the bottom. She ran out of t-shirt material, so then she used, like, an old denim pant. And that's also another great thing about it, is she uses recycled, you know, recycled fabric, basically. Stuff like old t-shirts, old pants, or like if you have a worn out team t-shirt, she can also, you know, do that. It's sort of like a memento kind of thing if you want to have some sentimental value in chocolate. And so she does that. She does like the little custom orders and stuff like that. And I think, I don't know if she has a website, but if you message her on her Instagram, she'll lead you in the right direction to kind of get to maybe eventually get one of these.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I will link her Instagram in the description.
Yeah.
So people can check that out. So moving on to the Guam team, a lot of people don't know about much about Guam, like what's the vibe there, where is it, what the climbing scene is like there.
Yeah, I mean, so Guam is in the Oceania region, basically. It is, I would say, a 4.5 hour flight from Japan.
Okay.
So if you're looking at the world map, if you're looking at Japan and you're looking at the Philippines, you basically draw a line from Japan southeast, and then directly east of the Philippines. It's a small island. It's about 15 miles wide, 32 north to south. So it's pretty small.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty small. Speed limit is like 35 miles per hour.
Okay.
So like if you wanted to do like a round the island trip, you could do it in a day.
Oh yeah, it's a U.S. territory, so it does do miles.
Yes. It's a U.S. territory. So, yeah, and a lot of people mistake that, you know, a lot of people that move from Guam to the United States mainland or, like, to other countries, a lot of us are complimented about our English.
Oh, okay.
You know, like, your English is very well. And I was like, no, I mean, English is our first language. The local language, though, and the local people are known as Chamorro. You know, the Chamorro people, and it's an Austronesian descent, I guess you could say. We like most of the Oceania region, it's like Austronesian, Polynesian kind of descent. So then mostly, I believe it, if I remember correctly, sorry if I'm wrong, I remember learning when I was in college in Guam, I remember in my Guam history class, it was Austronesian. But yeah. So we're in the Pacific. We're U.S. territory. You know, we have a naval base. We have an Air Force base. So we're basically a tactical region.
Oh, great.
We're a tactical island, I guess. I mean, and that's how we gain the U.S. citizenship. And, you know, there's a lot of political aspects to it that I don't really want to go into.
Yeah.
But, I mean, yeah, Guam. So that's where Guam's located. Well, it's a nice island. Very high tourist scene, used to have a lot of Japanese tourists. Recently been getting a lot of Korean tourists, stuff like that, from other Asian countries come visit Guam for like vacation. It's like the Hawaii of Asia, sort of.
Oh, okay.
sort of.
That makes sense.
I guess you could say it like that. Yeah, and then like the climbing community started recent. The climbing community has been there for a bit, but it's very, very hush hush down low a little bit for a while. And then when they opened up the commercial gym, it blew up.
So, is there like an outdoor climbing scene too?
Oh yeah. That's how the old climbing community was.
Oh, okay.
It was word of mouth, and it was like if people wanted to climb outdoors. But there's not a lot of boulders, and it's a lot of lead routes. There's a lot of established lead routes, and sometimes even like cave routes. Like you go into a cave and you climb. It's a little weird, but we're slowly developing. We're hoping to develop eventually. The anchors that were used in the established routes. We're all steel, so they're all rusted out.
Oh, so usually use?
It's steel, but if you're by the ocean and it's very salty, want to use titanium bolts and titanium gear, so then it doesn't wear out in a corrosive environment. So then, the Guam coach and some other people are slowly planning on reestablishing those routes and putting up new ones. It's just finding the money to buy all of the titanium bolts and then finding the time to go and put those roots up. And which is why like the Guam coach is always like, we need you here. We need you here. We need someone to start FAing everything. And I was like, I mean, I could, but it's all weed. I have a boulder. I mean, and we do have some boulders, but a lot of them are like the top outs are like, have heavy shrubs. It has trees on top of the boulders, moss and stuff like that. And for people who are curious, the rock type is limestone. It's like the very sharp limestone. Yeah, people who like to scramble. Some people like to scramble on top of the limestone hillsides by the ocean. And a lot of them usually come back from those hikes with a lot of cuts on their legs, because it's very sharp. And like, I feel like you can slice your hand open with some of the limestone. I don't know what to compare it to though, because it's basically coral limestone. I don't know if it's similar to like Spanish limestone. I'm not sure. I mean, I don't even know what limestone is. Maybe your Discord could probably.
Yeah.
Your Discord could probably give some insight on that. Yeah, I mean, like there's slowly establishing some. There's like a lot of the boulders that they have currently are like maybe I think the max grade that they have right now is like 7. I can't remember, but the coach there was like saying that there's a potential V10 and we don't know who can FA it, and they're asking me to do it.
Yeah,
but whenever I'm there, I'm working, and I usually work California time, so then it's. So I'm like very tired by the time they want to go outside, and I'm like, I can't. But maybe the next time around when I go back home, I'm trying to FA it. We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Try it.
Yeah.
Okay. So then, well, maybe Guam can just be like a very comp focused.
Yeah, I mean that. Yeah, I think they started out that way because, actually, fun fact from the team is that living here in SD, and then one of the female climbers used to live in the Bay Area and climb over there, so she's like sort of our lead specialist.
Oh cool.
Yeah, it's because she mainly likes to climb lead, and we watched her during the Oceania qualifiers, and I was like, she's way better than me at lead.
Okay. Yeah.
She's crazy strong at lead, but she's like very strong at lead, so she's like our female lead specialist, and so she trains the other people on the team on lead, and in the comp style stuff, our coach in the Guam team, he's actually from Santa Barbara, and he knows a lot of my friends from college, so it's pretty small world in terms of the climbing world, because it's like when I first met the team, or like when I first met the crew back home, I was like, oh, that's like, I didn't even know like you guys were here.
Yeah.
I wish I knew that before, the last time I was here, so that I could have like met you guys. But yeah. And so like that's like a nice little fun fact that so there's some people that have climbed here and brought, you know, the style, like the comp style too, because our head coach likes comp style mode.
Nice.
Yeah. So at least they have that.
Yeah.
That's good.
Okay. And you mentioned that some people on the team are still really new.
Yeah, I would say besides the coach, the lead specialist, Vicky, who is our female lead specialist, and me, everyone else has been climbing for less than a year.
That's crazy.
I think. There's some people that may have like picked up climbing a little bit earlier before it opened up. Because we have...
Oh, yeah, because the gym is...
Oh, now, actually, no. Yeah. We have one more guy. He's, like, the oldest guy in our team.
Oh, okay.
He used to live here in San Diego.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow, is this, like, the spot?
Well, because I think he works for the Coast Guard. But he does a lot. He's actually... So one of the guys on our team, who's the oldest on our team, he competes in Ninja Warrior.
Oh.
Yeah, and he actually has a Ninja Warrior gym back home.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, and so I remember seeing him here. I think he used to climb at the old Grottos G1. Well, I guess the original Grotto, not G1. And so that's when I first saw him, and I saw him wearing a Lomp shirt. And this was like back in like 2019. And so, you know, and then he moved back, and then I noticed, and then he opened the Ninja Warrior gym and stuff like that. So he's like, he's been climbing for a bit. And then there's another guy on our team, Mike. He lived in Japan for like college, I think, for school a little bit, for maybe like a year. And he picked up climbing there. And so there's a handful of us that have been climbing for maybe a little bit more than a year, me being 6 years, and then maybe Vicky being like 4 or 5 years also.
Wow.
And then our head coach, Noah, he's been climbing just as maybe longer than me. And then everyone else is less than a year when the gym opened.
Yeah.
So that's wild. It's crazy. And then, but a lot of the, I've noticed a lot of the newer climbers that are coming from Guam, they pick it up very easily. It's crazy to see it. Like a lot of the newer guys, they're just like very curious, like comp kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're young, but not comp kid, but not youth young, but they're very curious and they're just getting really, really good, really fast. So hopefully we'll get to see something happen in the next few years.
Yeah.
In terms of like excelling in comps. Hopefully. We'll see. I have high hopes, but yeah. And
I mean, it'll take some time.
It'll take time, but we need that. The thing is that we need that exposure. And so a lot of us are going out of the way and like, you know, going to comps, or like maybe going to a comp but not competing, but just like observe. You know?
Yeah.
Or going to other gyms outside the Guam gym where maybe the setting is a little bit different and they can train a little bit harder.
Yeah. And it helps to have someone to look up to. So
yeah, I mean,
you got to get out there.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of them ask me for advice. I'll bounce off Noah, the coach, and it's just like, you know, it's at least, and that's why he's like, we need you here so that they have someone to bounce off of usually, but not like occasionally when you're messaging us and stuff like that. Yeah, I mean, like, it's sometimes I feel like I have like FOMO where it's like, I'm missing out so much, and it's like this whole experience with the team. But I mean, like, sometimes like the sacrifice of living out here and like, well, also working as an engineer, but also training out here, getting experience here and trying to bring it back. It's all worth it in the end. Yeah. And a little piece of, I guess, I mean, I'm going off a tangent, a little piece of climbing history of Guam. We heard this from the vice president of IFSC. I think the vice president of IFSC is from Japan. I think so. I could be wrong. But, well, we met him at the Oceania qualifiers, but he told us that Akio Noguchi started climbing because she visited Guam.
What?
Yeah. Well, because she, that's a little piece of history. She, like, when she was a kid, her and her family visited Guam. She climbed a tree.
Oh, okay.
She climbed like a coconut tree, got obsessed with climbing and picked up climbing, I guess. I guess that's how the story went. I could be wrong, but that's what I heard. So that's a little climbing history from Guam. Yeah. I don't know how long ago that, but it was when Akio Noguchi was a little kid.
So. Okay. So she didn't get on any of like the actual limestone rocks?
Yeah. I don't know. But they said that she was climbing a coconut tree and she was obsessed with climbing.
That's good to know. Yeah. And I think that was the last question I had. So we'll just move on to the couple of Discord questions that we got. What made you decide to take part in World Cups? If you're an average climber, is there anything in it other than the experience? I imagine it's a costly affair.
Yeah, I mean, it's for the experience, but it's putting your foot through the door. Like you're I know, like I'm stepping into like a domain of like elite climbers, and like I know I'm not at that level, but just that alone will help expose a lot. I don't know the political aspect to it, but it's like the more exposure you get, the more the whatever organization is in charge of funding all these sporting funding these athletes, you know, you want that exposure, even though you know where your standing is compared to the rest of the circuit, because it shows to whatever head organization that, you know, we're putting our foot through the door, we're getting that experience, you know, and then it starts building up. Because, I mean, you know, there's a history of athletes not being paid enough.
Yeah.
You know?
Certainly.
And it's not just in climbing. You know, like, looking into the Olympics right now, right? Women's rugby hasn't been well known. But because of the Olympics and them winning bronze, you know, you never know the outcome. You know, I could be an average climber, could be having a good day that day. And I could just maybe go from place 98 to like halfway through the standings. You know, that big step is huge, you know, compared, like, sure, like I could be average, but compared to when you see that gain in experience, people will catch eye to that. You know, people are going to notice that. It may not be to the normal person. It could be to like an organization that pays attention to the climbing, to whatever sport that you have, you know, representing whatever country you have. And so then it kind of helps build, and it goes back to building the community and building the sport back home, is because, you know, if we can somehow catch on the eyes of more people, either from the island of Guam or people who pay attention to sports, then we can somehow get funding and get better programs for the youth team. And then maybe we can build a stronger team. You know, and that's my perspective on it. And I'm using this opportunity to also just grow. I mean, I don't know, maybe I will eventually become stronger and maybe climb better at these World Cup levels. We'll see eventually in the next four years if I still continue competing, but at least there's some kind of foundation that the team back home can build on.
Yeah.
You know, and there's this saying that the team likes to say. There's the motto of the gym, which is from the ground up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That's like the motto of our gym, is from the ground up, because, you know, we start from nothing and we're just going to build up from there. And, you know, when you build something coming from an engineer that works on structures, you want to build the strong foundation. You know, you may not have the strongest climbers in that foundation, but at least they're laying the lines, they're laying the, you know, the reinforcement, all that stuff to help build the team for future generations.
Yeah. I mean, certainly if I were you, I would take every opportunity I could get, because it's just cool.
Yeah. Right? And it's really cool. I mean, I've definitely like second guessed it when they first made the team. I was like, oh my God, it's a lot of money for traveling. I'm going to have to dip into my savings a little bit. You know, I have to, you know, I mean, sure. I mean, to make things fair, I also tried out for the team. I had to fly back home. You know, that's a lot of money to fly back home.
Yeah, it's pretty far.
And so I definitely second guessed it. I talked to my friends at the gym, my friends from college who also climb, and, you know, and they were like, yeah, I mean, what's there to lose other than money?
Sure.
other than like, you know, spending the money, but at least you're doing something for the future of climbing in Guam. And I was like, yeah, I mean, that's at least like one of my climbing goals, is to it's always been one of my climbing goals once I started climbing, was to build the community. Like I mentioned earlier, it was to build a community in Guam. And, you know, since there's already a gym, maybe I can open a training center, you know, that's, you know, that caters to the team.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I mean, to me at least, because I've also obviously spent a lot of time and money getting involved in this climbing scene, either through like competitions or like going to see, just like see the World Cups.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And I mean, it's definitely an investment, a personal investment to do all this stuff. But, you know, sometimes you kind of look at the big picture and you look at the big picture and you just kind of brush it over and say it's for something bigger.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay. And so then what is your plan for the future? Are you going to go to all Bouldering World Cups?
Eventually, slowly. Depends on how funding will go for the team and, you know, whoever gets better in the team. Because we want to send each and every one of our athletes so that everyone gets the same experience that I've had. And, you know, because, I mean, we only have our local comps and, you know, we don't have other setters from other countries or, you know, other gyms. We only have the one gym and we only have the one head setter. So then, you know, we don't have that much exposure. So a lot of them are going to be competing in the World Cups. And then for me personally, I would like to go do a full circuit of Bouldering World Cup and then maybe eventually add in lead.
Ooh.
Eventually, we'll see how that goes. But as for now, it's going to be periodically. I know some of us will be going not to Prague because we have a local comp happening back home in September, which I'll be attending. But a handful of us will be going to World Cup Seoul in Korea. So, yeah, I mean, I guess expect me to be there, but I mean, they don't air the qualification round, so you won't really see me. I'll probably be posting while I'm there. Yeah. And if I'm not competing, then I'm going to be there to support the team because that's part of my travel route right now.
Okay. So there's multiple people from Guam going to Seoul.
Yeah, I think so. Vicky, the female on our team, is for sure. She will most likely do both Boulder and lead. And then we're looking at potentially myself and two other guys, maybe three, because we have 8 allotted slots.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
8, well, it's 2 for each category. So 2 for bouldering, 2 for lead, but then it's male, female. So then 4, 4. And then if you have one person doing both, that takes 2 spots. So I max 8, minimum 4, I guess, if you have, I don't know if I'm doing the math there, but yes. Yeah. So, there's another guy on our team, his name's, Don, and he's pretty strong. And then we have another guy, who's gotten strong at lead. We don't have a lead ball, but he's got the endurance for it.
Wow.
Yeah. So we're literally training from nothing and trying to build something, you know, because it's hard to build tall walls in Guam because we have a height restriction for buildings because we have high seismic zone.
Oof.
Earthquakes.
Yeah.
In Guam. And, you know, and that's the only building type that you can build taller than 30 feet is a hotel.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And, I mean, we can try and do a climbing hotel.
Yeah.
But that'd be interesting to do. There's been suggestions of digging into the ground and like digging down maybe 10 feet and then doing a 40 foot tall building, but it's at 30 in terms
that
of
that would be so
I mean I think that's what they did. Enrico said that's one one of the gyms in Japan did that because they also have the same height.
True.
They have the same height restriction.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Because yeah,
they don't have any lead walls. No.
A lot of them are Boulder. But I mean, like, you can still train lead on Boulder. Yeah. So you just have to make sure you learn how to clip.
Yeah.
Yeah. And train for your head game for the height.
Yeah.
Roots.
And just like the one shot.
Yeah. And so there's a couple people on the team that have been training on the outdoor boulders with the sketchy bolts, but they're doing it on top rope, but learning to clip, and you know, they're clipping at the same time, and you know, gaining that endurance and head game, even though they're on top rope, but moth leading. So, I mean, that's how I learned how to lead, actually, basically. It's the same. Yeah. I mean, you work with what you have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, good luck in Seoul.
Yeah. Thank you.
Cool to see. Okay. I think that's all the questions I had. Any final thoughts or final statements?
I mean, going back to what I've said previously, I guess to reflect back on the conversation we had, and if you feel like you've started too late, and it's never, I mean, ideally you want to start early, but it's never too late to try and become something bigger and be part of a bigger picture. And if something feels if something feels like it is impossible, to make it feel possible is to see the final outcome, to visualize the final outcome far into the future and be like, okay, this is why I'm doing it. If you have high passions for climbing or in anything in general, and you want to make that thing bigger or like build a community for it and establish something, then hey, we can go for it. You know, it's like, if you want it so that much, then do whatever it takes, you know?
Yeah.
So, I guess that's one that's my final thing, I guess.
Okay. No, it's good. Good. Anything you want to shout out or let people know where they can find you?
You can find me. I mean, the only socials I have is Instagram.
Okay.
And, AGBOI, which is, it's just AG boy. AG is my first name initials, and then boy, it is. And I mean, backstory to that is it was my alias growing up as a breakdancer, and I stuck with it. So that's why.
Wait, AG boy is not your initials.
No, AG is my initials. Boy,
how
is just
that your initials?
Oh, my full name is Alan Gregory. Yeah.
What do you mean?
Yeah. So my full name is Alan Gregory.
Like your first
Alan.
Name?
Yeah, yeah, my legally, oh, like my no. legal name is Alan Gregory.
God damn, like you never told me that.
And no one knows that. Oh, no
nice.
One really, now the world knows. Oh, well, now the climbing community knows that. I mean, I don't really say much on it. A lot of people always wonder, like, where did the G come from?
Yeah, that's what I was wondering.
Oh, it's my second name. Like, my legal name is Alan Gregory.
Okay, gotcha.
But you can just call me Marie.
Okay, yeah.
And like, I mean... like to back on my Instagram name, it's just everyone back from high school, they don't know me as Alan, they only know me as AG boy.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean that's me growing up. Yeah, I mean that's because everyone knew me from dancing, and that was my alias in dancing.
Oh, so. Alias, gotcha.
Yeah, so you can find me on @AGboy on Instagram.
Awesome. Okay. Well, thank you for joining me today. This was fun, and best luck to you in Seoul.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for making it to the end of the podcast. Don't forget to like and subscribe if you enjoyed. Otherwise, you are a super fake climber. If you're listening on a podcasting platform, I'd appreciate if you rate it 5 stars, and you can continue the discussion on the free competition climbing Discord linked in the description. Thanks again for listening.